great. So, Stephen, there you are. Stephen, do you mind? I know it's your birthday, but stand up. I won't embarrass you too. He walks in and he goes, "Hey, can I borrow your jacket?" Thank you, brother. So we're going to celebrate his birthday today, but last week we were celebrating Pharaoh's birthday instead. And if we could have left off where chapter 40 ended in verse 22, we would have left Joseph at Pharaoh's birthday with some measure of hope. Maybe the most hope he's had in a long, long time. Because the cupbearer has been restored. Everything that Joseph interpreted about the cupbearer and the baker's dreams came to pass. The baker was executed. The cupbearer was exonerated and restored fully to his office. His office is being a chief advisor to Pharaoh himself. And right before he's released, Joseph has this private conversation. "Remember me when you're out there. I'm innocent, truly innocent here. I did nothing. I was sold as a slave. And I did nothing here to deserve to be in this prison." So Joseph would have ended that day with measures of hope. If it hadn't been for verse 23, we might have thought the same thing. But verse 23, chapter 40, we were told, "Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but he forgot him." So out of sight, out of mind. Those who are a big help to us in adversity quickly are out of sight when we face prosperity. And then chapter 41, almost seemingly Moses deliberately wants to add insult to injury. Listen to how it opens. "After 2 whole years." Now in Hebrew, this actually says "after 2 years of days." This is getting the idea across. This isn't just 1.7 years. We're not rounding up 1.9 years. But 730 days later, before anything happens. And I think we should pause. We should actually let that sink in. My grandson in Atlanta is 20 months old. That means for all of his life, plus another 4 months, nothing changes for Joseph. It's identical. Every day he gets up and every day he goes through faithful service to God as someone in prison. Every day he moves forward, still wondering, "God, will it be today? Will you act today? I know the dreams you gave me." And we've talked about it. God gave the dream twice, slightly different to Joseph, but twice so it'd be solidified in his mind, this is true. It's going to come to pass. So Joseph, having had two dreams, Joseph 2 years ago from chapter 41, having interpreted two dreams and seen them come completely true, is still waiting. And nothing's happening. So these four words carry an awful lot of weight. And, you know, it almost, when I read them this week, it almost gave me this sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. Because if you've ever been in a situation where you thought, not even too awful long ago, several years ago, Pam and I thought we understood exactly what God was showing us he was going to do. I mean, I was so convinced, I was so bought in, I was so all in that I was ready to do it yesterday. And then he went and he did something entirely different. And I was like, "God, I thought I understood. I thought I knew what you were doing. I thought I knew where you were going with this." But he showed me he had a different plan. And some of y'all, I can tell even as I'm looking around the room, you've been there. You know what that feels like. You know what it is to face what you thought you understood was God's plan and purpose for the next piece of your life. Only he went a different direction. And he didn't do exactly what you thought he would do or in the timetable you wanted him to do it. So we all identify with Joseph right now. Chapter begins with us, with Joseph, identifying with the weight of these words, "after 2 whole years." But you know, it's good for us to remember and to be reminded. There are scriptural principles that we ought to keep front and center in our lives. Listen to Isaiah, Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." See, God's plan is perfect. It's not ours. We try to understand it, but it's not ours. But as we live our lives, we can rely on the fact that He is reliable. His plan is perfect. See, for Joseph, this 2-year stretch, God's still working. He is still at work. And Joseph faithfully is still pursuing his relationship with God. God's plan is intact. His timing would be more perfect than Joseph could ever know. And after these four words, verse 1 then goes on to tell us that just as Joseph was facing another ordinary day getting up in prison, Pharaoh's mourning is not going as normal. Let's see what happens. We know this story. Y'all have been coming to me and saying, oh, I love Joseph. It's such a, you know, he's one of the characters in the Bible. I mean, y'all could all come up here and teach this because we know it so well. But it's good for us to look at it again in detail. So let's track with it. Chapter 41, verse 1. After the 2-year wait, Pharaoh dreamed. He was standing by the Nile. Behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, verse 3, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. Well, this dream right away we see has a very Egyptian flavor to it. As we're looking at it, we see the Pharaoh, king of Egypt, treated as a god, believed himself to be a god on earth. Here he is in his own setting. The Nile was the giver of life. Happy, H-A-P-I, was the god of the Nile, the fertility god, the giver of life. Cows, a sign of fertility, of nourishment. And in a normal setting, because the cows would ordinarily actually go down right by the Nile and wade in chest deep in the Nile, feed off the lush reed papyrus that was growing there, and also keep cooled off at the same time and dodge a few flies. All they had to be aware of was an occasional crocodile. But other than that, it was really a good plan. So as he's dreamed, the dream opens in a way that's logical. It actually makes sense in his mind. But then something really unusual wakes him up. Listen to the way the dream continues. Verse 4. These ugly thin cows ate up the 7 attractive plump cows. Where is Chick-fil-A when you need them? Eat more chicken. You know? Not here. These scraggly, scrawny, ugly, thin cows not only have the audacity to come up right by the prize-winning cows that won the county fair, but they eat them up. Pharaoh awoke, no wonder. Verse 5, he fell asleep again and he dreamed a second time. Behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So now we've been given Pharaoh's dream. Moses has given us an account of the 2 dreams, very similar, going to be equal in their meaning. And he awakes and he's troubled. Verse 8, when he awakes in the morning, his spirit was troubled and he sent and he called for all the magicians of Egypt and all of its wise men. Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. So here's Pharaoh in a conundrum. He's got a real issue. He's got dreams that have tormented him all night long. We're not told if he went back to sleep after the second dream. My guess is it's kind of a fitful night, and he didn't get much sleep. And in that morning, he is up, and he is sending for every advisor he can get. All the magicians, all the wise men, these were the people who were skilled. Remember last week we talked about in Egypt, there was an actual, you could get a degree in dream interpretation. You could study the books. You can learn how to interpret dreams and tell the future through dreams. It was believed that dreams were a revelation of what was about to happen. So Pharaoh brings all of his chief advisors together, and no one understands. No one can tell him anything about the meaning of these dreams. So actually, Pharaoh is in the exact same spot that the cupbearer and the chief baker had been in chapter 40, verse 8. Remember, they're in prison. They have dreams they don't understand, and to their knowledge, there was no one in prison to interpret those dreams. No wonder the next thing we read in the chapter, verse 9, is that the chief cupbearer now speaks. The one who forgot Joseph 2 years earlier starts to remember. I remember my offenses today, verse 9, when Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. We dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with his own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. We might think, how convenient. Or we might think, better late than never, that this guy finally remembers Joseph and recounts what he had, the role he had in his life, how both dreams that night proved to be true. Here was a reliable interpreter, someone who could see what others, Joseph was able to see as if in the light of the day what others lost, obscured in darkness. And he remembers it. And he lets Pharaoh know. And immediately, I love how verse 14 and 15, how Moses writes these verses. There's a sense of urgency here. There's a sense of this has got to be done post haste because Pharaoh is really distraught. Listen to how it's written. Then Pharaoh sent and called or summoned Joseph. It was an official summons. And they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to him, to Joseph, I have had a dream. Let me just walk through that just a little bit with you because the urgency is there. He wants an answer now. He is super disturbed. God so impressed these dreams as something foreboding in his mind that he needs someone to show up. He needs someone who can make sense of it. The Joseph quickly being brought out takes time, though, to shave and change his clothes. Well, if Pharaoh's in a hurry, what are you dawdling for? Except this was actually a cultural concession. For him to appear before Pharaoh with a beard, see, for a beard to a Hebrew was a sign of dignity. But to Egyptian, it was an offense. You ever seen the pharaohs or the drawings of pharaohs or even the female pharaohs? They would wear a fake beard, this plastic or metal beard. That was a sign of dignity, but a real beard was an offense. So he shaved so it won't be an unnecessary offense because he understands this is a God-given opportunity. And he's not going to do anything in and of himself as he finds out what God wants him to do. He's not going to do anything in and of himself to be an unnecessary offense. Good takeaway for us. We get to share the gospel. We get to speak into one another's lives. Truth in love, sometimes hard truth. We get to speak to unbelieving family members. But you know, sometimes we become the offense rather than the cross. We don't eliminate the things that we could eliminate that would reduce the chance of offense. We just kind of put it out there and say, take it or leave it. Joseph doesn't approach it that way. So Joseph shaves, change of clothes. The change of raiment would be into clothes in keeping with the position he was now to assume, at least for that moment, an advisor to Pharaoh himself. He was being brought with a real mission. So verse 15, we're told, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it. See, Pharaoh's ready to get down to business. Moses doesn't tell us about any pleasantries. He doesn't tell us about any introductions, any backstory, anything whatsoever. Even when the chief cupbearer introduces the reality that there's a guy in prison, in Potiphar's house, in prison, who can interpret dreams, he doesn't say anything about his innocence. He doesn't say anything about being wrongfully charged. He simply says he interpreted dreams and they came true. That's all Pharaoh needed to know. And he's ready to act. So right away he starts telling his story, recounting it to Joseph with hopes that he can help. So I've had a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it. I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. So Joseph's reputation has preceded him. Pharaoh has high hopes and expectations. And here's Joseph. I mean, again, it's helpful at times to put ourselves real time into scenarios. 2 years more of prison. The first thing he does isn't, oh, Pharaoh, live forever, but, oh, Pharaoh, your thinking is wrong. You know, I don't interpret dreams. God does. Well, that's important because we see again something of the character of this man, Joseph. He was depending every day, vibrantly depending on his relationship with God. God was sustaining him. God was strengthening him. And everything that Joseph did, God was giving him favor, and Joseph was aware of that. Calvin has this to say, if I can paraphrase it slightly, all of our abilities and all of our gifts that God gives us will appear all the greater when they are used humbly, not to heap praise on ourselves, but to give all glory rightfully to God. I think Joseph totally understood that. He was tracking with, this isn't me, but God will work through me. So after saying that, verse 17, we know how it works. We get the second account of the dream that Pharaoh had. He tells Joseph the dream. The only information that we gain out of this next several verses that was different from the first, verse 19, not only were these cows very ugly and thin, they were so bad, I've never seen anything like it in all of Egypt. And then verse 21, but when they had eaten them up, When they had eaten them, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were still as ugly as at the beginning. So there was no benefit. Wouldn't you expect this scraggly, scrawny, bone-sticking out type of creatures that were cows, eating big, fat, plumpy ones would at least look better a little? No wonder he's disturbed. Logically, this is making no sense. Then he goes on and he recounts the same thing with the plump ears, the blighted ears, and the ears consume the other ears, and there's no improvement, there is no change. So now Joseph, verse 25, having heard the dreams, is able to be used of God with discernment to let Pharaoh know what the dreams mean. Verse 25, God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. You know that as he unfolds this, he now shares with Pharaoh the seven good years, the seven fat, plump cows. That represents 7 years of incredible blessing. We're going to have crop like you wouldn't believe for 7 years. But those seven scraggly cows and those seven blighted years that consume them and don't change, that means it's going to be followed by 7 years of severe famine. So severe that we will forget the plenty that we had. The worst famine that Egypt has in a long time seen. History records show us that Egypt has gone through famines before. So severe that they cannibalized each other. This was one of those famines. Well, we shouldn't get confused. Because as we look at the famine, we might think this famine is going to hit Egypt because God's going to judge Egypt, right? Egypt stands for wickedness. Egypt stands for sin. So God's now going to judge. However, if God was sending this famine only to judge Egypt, why would he have given Joseph more than knowledge? He would have given him wisdom so that he had a plan. See, God's got something else that he's doing through this famine. It's not merely judgment. The feast followed by the famine was setting the stage for God's deliverance of his people. But look now as we track down, go a little bit further in the passage. Verse 32, not only has Joseph twice now said to Pharaoh in verses 25 to 31 that God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Yes, Pharaoh, you've understood it right. This is revelation. Something is about to take place. But verse 32, the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that this thing is fixed by God. It's certain. Not only is it certain, but it will shortly happen. It's imminent. There's no time to waste. Pharaoh could have said, thank you very much. I can go through my day now. I can relax. I understand what it means and done nothing. But God had already worked in Joseph's life so that he didn't let that happen. Look what happens next. Joseph didn't just give him knowledge. He gave him wisdom. Verse 33, now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plentiful years, and let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through famine. As we look at this, Joseph not only, again, with knowledge, lets Pharaoh know what's going to happen, but he also lets him know what to do about it. See, knowledge helps us understand. Oh, I can understand. If I do A, B is going to be the consequence. Wisdom says, don't do A if you don't want B as the consequence. And here we see wisdom kicking in. Joseph shares with Pharaoh, here's what we should do. You find someone who's capable, someone who is understanding, someone who can look through this and understand what's the way to survive it. So the plan of action, God has given Egypt time to get ready. And Joseph shares how they can get ready. And he says, all you need is get someone in place who has wisdom, someone appointed overseer of the land. So this would become the commander-in-chief of grain. This would become someone who would have the power and the authority to do a 20% tax nationwide. They were going to take one-fifth of all the produce every year of this abundant 7 years. And they were going to store it. Not just in one place, but in every city. So it would be right where it would be needed later. It was also, when we paid tax in Birmingham, our warehouse was right here in Birmingham. We could see it. We could know, okay, 20% of my crop is sitting right there. Not too sure why, because we've got plenty of food. But it's going to be right there. And then appoint overseers, those who are capable leaders, and take that grain and store it, gather it, so that there is plenty in reserve. It made sense. So much so that in verse 37, here's where we get to see the exaltation of Joseph. This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all of his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? See, he could recognize as a pagan. He could recognize, even with his polytheistic thinking of many gods, and many gods who might give us a little bit of insight into life, he could look at this and he could say, there's something different here. Y'all couldn't do this, magicians. Y'all couldn't figure this out, wise men. But this guy out of the prison, the God he serves, showed him what it means. He could discern the Spirit of God. Verse 39, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, and there's none so discerning and so wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. I won't give you the Hebrew word because they're so hard to pronounce, but the Hebrew there actually is, all of them shall kiss you, or the ground before you. In other words, he's saying, all my people will give homage to you. Psalm 2 says, kiss the son lest he be angry. Exact same word in here. Do homage, do obeisance, bow down before. Continues in verse, as the verse 40 continues, only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh then said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Now, why is he repeating himself so much? I'm putting you in charge. See, I'm putting you in charge. No, get it. I am Pharaoh. I am putting you in charge. What does he do? But then he goes on. See, who is Joseph? Johnny come later, just sprung from the pit of the dungeon. He's a Hebrew. He's not even Egyptian, for crying out loud. And I'm going to put you in charge of the entire nation. You understand, he's becoming what's called the vizier, the prime minister of Egypt. Second in command of the most powerful nation on the face of the earth at that time. So why does Pharaoh keep reiterating it? Because it's hard to believe. Not only does he reiterate it, but then he gives him these signs, signification, says, here's my signet ring. You know the ring, the one that you seal things with, so it's official, that's yours. Not only do you have the signet ring, but I'm also going to give you royal robes. Does that sound familiar? That robe thing back with Joseph and the brothers? Now he is donning the king's robes, the ruler's robes. Gave him royal robes, and they gave him Air Force Two. Wasn't Air Force One, but Air Force Two will work. The vice president's jet is now officially his. He's got the second chariot, the second best chariot in the entire land. And they called out before him, bow the knee. Thus Pharaoh set him over the land of Egypt. Verse 44, Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh. Without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. No one even takes a breath unless it's okay with you. Now that's some authority. And that's quite a reversal of role and position. From thrown in a pit, sold as a slave, in Potiphar's house, some level of leadership and authority, then betrayed because of lies and a wife that was conniving. Years in prison. Broken promises of someone who promised that he would speak favorably of him. 2 whole more years. And now suddenly, complete success. You see, Joseph didn't spend those 2 years waiting for complete success. He lived every moment of every day saying one thing matters. God is God, and I'm not. God is on the throne, and I will serve him still. That's important for us because it's easy for us sometimes to think, you know, God, if you just will give me, you fill in the blank with your thing, okay? If you just give me whatever it is that you believe, if God gave it to you, everything would be really, really good in your life. God calls us to something far more meaningful than that. See, God doesn't want us to want his blessing. He wants us to want him. He wants us to want the giver of the gift, not the gift. And Joseph, through all of this scenario, all of these trials, has learned God is paramount. He is it in his life. So beyond the robe, the rings, the chariot, he also says, I'm going to give you a new name, Zaphnath-Paneah. Why in the world would he do that? Joseph's good enough for me. And we're studying the life of Joseph. Now, if I just say, hey, come join us for a study in the life of Zaphnath-Paneah, y'all would all go into another class, I guarantee you. Yeah, this is craziness. Yeah, what did that signify? And by the way, Bible scholars really have no clue what that name means in Egyptian. Except some speculate that it means he who sees the future and savior of the world. But Zaphnath-Paneah was given as a name because he was now to rule Egypt as a Hebrew. That wouldn't work. So Pharaoh makes him a full Egyptian. Full citizenship. Exonerated, lifted, exalted, and you are now an Egyptian like me. Not only that, I'm going to give you a wife. Her name's Asenath. She's daughter of Potiphar, a priest of On. Don't confuse Potiphar with Potiphar. Oh, you don't even want to waste the time reading the commentaries to try to say they're the same. And now somehow Potiphar's wife is actually his mother-in-law. I'm not going there. You talk about in-law problems. Man. No. But he gives him an Egyptian bride. Because again, he's a full Egyptian. He's going to lead this country for a long, long time. So Joseph, verse 46, we're told in his exaltation, he was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Are y'all thinking type of Christ anywhere through here? 30 years old when his public ministry begins. 30 years old when he begins ruling over Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh. Jesus himself went out from the presence of the Father. And he went through all the land of Egypt, all those who were sinners, in order to bless them and give them what they needed. Verse 47. During 7 plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly. He gathered the food, on and on and on. We know how it works out. Verse 49, Joseph stored up the grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. And then verse 53, after the 7 years of plenty occurred, came to an end, the 7 years of famine began, as Joseph had said. And there was famine in all the lands, not just Egypt, all the countries around. But in all the land of Egypt, there was bread. Why? Because God had given wisdom to his humbled servant. And he had a plan that he followed. You know, it's one thing to plan great, grandiose plans. You know, sometimes we kind of get caught up in our planning and we forget we got to execute the plan. We got to follow it. We got to actually do something with it. Now, Joseph, he's following the plan. Verse 55, when all the land of Egypt was famished, in other words, not because there was no nothing in reserve, but because in 2 years the crops had finally subsided enough that they couldn't produce anything on their own. They're saying, look, we're doing everything we ordinarily do. There's nothing to eat. They cry out to Pharaoh, take care of us. What does Pharaoh say? Go to Joseph. And whatever he says, do. So when the famine spread over all the land, verse 56, Joseph opened the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians. No welfare here. He'd already taxed them 20%. Now he's going to sell back what they gave as taxes. Let that one sink in. Moreover, verse 57, typical of Moses in this period of writing, he's given us a segue to the next chapter. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain because the famine was severe in all the land. So Jim, you skipped over verses 50 to 52. Why'd you do that? Well, remember Joseph married an Egyptian wife. We're told he has two sons. Manasseh, his name means making to forget. Now God has made me to forget all the betrayal, all the things that I've gone through. Life is going in a good direction. I can put that aside. And also Ephraim, making fruitful. Two takeaways as we wrap up this morning. Again, thinking of the type of Christ. Here we see half Jew, half Gentile, and these two half tribes are counted among the 12 tribes of Israel from that day forth. The Gentiles are grafted in. Well, that's encouraging to us because most of us are Gentile believers. Jesus Christ came to save from all nations, all peoples, everyone that God had chosen before the foundations of the world. Jew, Gentile, barbarian, Scythian, bond, free, male, female, doesn't matter. A level field before the cross. Not only does it show us the beauty of that, but he gave, when Pharaoh gave Joseph a new name, remember Philippians 2? We looked at it a couple months ago when we taught it. A new name. The name at which every knee will bow. That new name being Savior and Lord. What a beautiful picture of the type of Christ. All the grain he gathered. Did you catch the phrase? It's got a unique patriarchal flavor to it. As much grain as the sand on the seashore. Do you remember Abraham's promise? Do you see yourself sitting there as part of the grain? Because as much of the sand on the seashore, that's how many will believe in Jesus Christ and in faith be with him for all eternity. Royal sons and royal daughters. Not only that, but Joseph equipped others to help gather the grain. Jesus trained disciples to continue the work that he began in the power of the Holy Spirit on his behalf. So we see the type of Christ. But one more takeaway. Remember also looking at the development of Joseph's character. Joseph's character has remained a constant. And we see that by how he names his children. He doesn't give them Egyptian names. Pharaoh had the power to rename him. He has the power to name his sons by Hebrew names. You see, he was a testimony that God is on the throne, not Pharaoh. He was a testimony that God is who he served, not Pharaoh. God was who he served, not himself. Success would not go to Joseph's head any more than failure went to his head. Because he was anchored in God and in God alone. See, Joseph's character, as Pastor Reeder has put it, even in his book, 3D Leadership, our circumstances don't determine our character, they simply reveal it. See, the situations in life that we go through simply reveal who we have been becoming all along. And our relationship with God at that moment is on full display. Can we be encouraged by this? And can we also be challenged by this? Because what you're doing right now with what you're walking through, is about your walk with God. How you're responding to what you're facing right now is about your relationship with God. And you will not suddenly show up and be some great big way to go God type of a person's life next week, next month, next year, if you're not anchored in Him right now. God calls us to stay anchored right now. Faithful in the moment. When you're faithful in the small things, God can entrust you with the bigger things. But He calls us to faithfulness right now. See, Joseph's character was defined by his relationship with God. His relationship was tempered by the fires of all that he faced. Pastor, warning alert for those of you about to go to worship. We're back into Christian suffering today. Incredible sermon. I love when he goes away. He's always preaching good, but man, when he goes away and comes back, he preaches really good. And he really messes with me. Romans 28. Remember, we've already talked about how Romans 28, Joseph lives it out in full color. Romans 8:28. You know it. All things work together for good for those who and are. What's verse 29 say?
For those who were named
to be conformed to the
image. To be what?
To be what? Conformed to the image of His Son. What was God doing with Joseph at 17, at 19, at 21, at 27, and now at 30, He was conforming him to the image of godly character. You see, in our Christian life, God often calls us to wait. And as we wait, we're even knowing at times that's going to include suffering. And sometimes we're going to go through life in a way that we think the good we have done is going without reward. But in all of this, God is working. He's doing what's most important to Him. And you know what's most important to Him? Conforming us to the image of His Son. He's whittling away. He's getting us ready. He's refining us and sanctifying us and setting us apart so that we will be like Him. So let me encourage you, God is still working. He's developing your character and my character still. And even when we might think we've been forgotten or that God's plan has gone off the rails, nothing is amiss. He is working. He is holding you. He is for you. And He's making you like His Son. Father, would you help us? It's so important for us to remember that we only see through a glass darkly. But you not only see the end from the beginning, you ordain the end from the very beginning. You are God and you are on your throne and you are alive and you are working your plan to perfection. Give us the strength and the grace we need to believe you, to trust you, to follow you, especially when the plan doesn't seem to make sense to us. Let us trust your character. And as we trust your character, refine our character that we would be more like your Son. Because if that happens, that alone will enable us to give you great glory. And we will praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.